You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, or should I say buongiorno to the Transfer Window, the podcast that brings you the news before it becomes news, as well as insight and analysis into all of the topics you want to hear and discuss in world football. Today at Duncan Castle, still chasing his butterflies, but I'm pleased to say we're joined by our very old friend and the most handsome man in football, Aurelio Capaldi. Football journal's extraordinario in Italia, because we're going to go from Spain this week, where we began our journey, to the beautiful country of Italy. Welcome, Aurelio.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody.
So you know that, Aurelio, since you were last on, I think a month ago, Gary Lineker has been asking why you're more handsome than he is. We've directed him to your profile picture.
And nice.
He's yet to deny it. as always, our faithful listeners, we start with news, very, very big news, and that is that Real Madrid, we understand, contacted Manchester United today in a last-ditch attempt to find out if they were indeed willing at any price to sell Paul Pogba to them in this window. Of course, the European window closes this Monday coming at 11 o'clock British summer time. So the answer was given very, very flatly, and that was a no. So Pogba stays put in Manchester United unless, of course, something extraordinary happens. And we know that Mino Raiola, Pogba's agent, has been trying very, very hard to extract his client from Old Trafford and get him to the Santiago Bernabeu. Madrid are now consigned to the fact that they will not be signing Neymar from Paris Saint-Germain. That deal obviously still hangs in the balance with regards to Barcelona, and Aurelio and I will discuss that later in the podcast. However, the news coming out of Manchester United and out of Madrid is that Pogba stays. There is a suggestion that, as we reported in the podcast 2 weeks ago, that Madrid will come back again in a year's time, so a summer from now, when Pogba will have 1 year remaining in his contract and try again then, and that Pogba himself may or may not be given assurances that the club would be more willing to negotiate should he turn down the offer of a new contract to stay at Manchester United. Right now, however, Aurelio and I are going to discuss something which has been quite a trend this summer, and that has been the migration of Premier League players to Serie A, something we've not seen for quite a long time, Aurelio, as I can remember, not since the 90s, 2000s, have so many players been attracted to leave England and go to Italy. Would that be correct?
That's very surprising, because Serie A now seems to be better, and so the level is improving. And during the last years, everybody was asking why Premier League players are not going to Italy. And now the trend is the one you said. So it's very surprising, but it's nice to welcome Premier League players here in Serie A.
Well, let's start with breaking news today, Aurelio, which is that Chris Smalling is set to join Roma from Manchester United. An interesting move, I think, because Smalling has never been deemed to be a player who necessarily would adapt very well, not just to a foreign league, but also a foreign culture. He's very much been a homeboy at Fulham and then Manchester United. He recently was given a new contract by Manchester United. However, he cleared a surplus to requirements for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And is this something which came out of the blue for people in Italy as well, that Smalling might join Roma?
The news about Smalling was really surprising because the names for Roma were different names. Everybody was speaking about Lovren, for example. But I think it's going to be an interesting challenge for Smalling because, as you said, I mean, nobody thought that he would come, and Roma are not supposed to be a top team this season because everybody thinks that Juventus, Inter Milan and Napoli are the title contenders. But it can be a surprise, and Serie A is something new. I think that the deal was possible also because Manchester United accepted a 3 million fee for the loan, and Roma doesn't have an obligation to sign him at the end of the season. But I think it's going to be an interesting challenge for him.
Tactically, Aurelio, you've watched Smalling play over many years for Manchester United and Champions League and for England. Do you think he fits into Roma's setup comfortably, or do you think he's going to have to go on a bit of a learning curve with regards to adapting, not just to Roma, but to Serie A?
I think that he will need some time to understand Fonseca's principles. The new Roma manager. But I don't think that the contenders for a place as a starter, as a central defender in Roma, are phenomenal. Fazio is probably going to start most of the games, but the other place is open. And the Brazilian Juan Jesus was really disappointing against Genoa. And the new signing, Mancini, still has to adapt. So I think there is room for Smalling, but he has to understand quickly what Fonseca wants from him.
Of course, he's not the only, or indeed, there have been a very recent English, very, very famous defender who joined Roma, which was Ashley Cole, 4 years ago, I think now, Aurelio. And Cole's time, I think, was seen as quite successful at Roma. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that Ashley Cole went to Roma at the wrong time because we all know that Ashley Cole, when he was at his best, he was a fantastic player. But when he went to Roma, I mean, he was about to finish his career. So it was not the right time to give his best. And also, it was a very difficult time for the club. So things got heated for him. And he was not given a proper chance to show what he still had to give.
Very true, very true. Let's move to, as well, the signing of Matteo Darmian to Parma. Less of a surprise, obviously, given Darmian's background. But again, a player leaving Manchester United for Serie A, is this widely accepted as a positive move for Parma?
I think it's a positive move for everybody. I think it's a positive move for Parma, who gets a player who can still give something to Serie A. I think it's a positive move for Darmian, who needs to come back to a real challenge because there was no room for him at Manchester United. And obviously, it was a good move for Manchester United because the plans were different and there was no room for Darmian at Old Trafford. So I think it's a good move for everybody.
What chances? I mean, just reflecting on those two most recent developments, Aurelio, Smalling and Darmian, Roma and Parma. What are the considerations with regards to how those teams will perform in Serie A this season? And what can Smalling and Darmian expect in terms of, you know, will they be challenging for trophies or will they be playing in teams who are going to be maybe less than top four?
Roma will try to get back a place in Champions League. Last year, it was a huge disappointment for Roma to be left out of the Champions League because, as you can remember, Roma got a place in the Champions League semifinals 2 years ago. So for Roma, it was a big disappointment. I think that the real aim for Roma is the fourth place, and it won't be easy to reach it. For Parma, different story, because they will try to avoid relegation. They will try to be safe. The sooner the better. They are a good team. I think they can really get what they want.
I do have fond memories of Parma, Aurelio, in the sort of early 2000s. Some great players, great managers as well. They played Champions League. They seem to have fallen a long way in Italian football since that time.
Yeah, those were different times, and Parma were really at a very good level, and they could really sign great players. But now it's different. Now they are trying to get a place in Serie A, a stable place in Serie A, and they are trying to do a decent job and to avoid relegation. That's their aim now. I think that's their dimension. That's their real dimension, and they have interesting players up front, because Inglese is a very interesting player, and Gervinho is still a player who can make things happen when he gets the right day.
Indeed, indeed. Now, two of the most expensive transfers so far, well, this summer, Aurelio, have taken place to Internazionale, and of course, former Chelsea boss Antonio Conte, now in charge of Inter. Alexis Sanchez has completed his loan move to Inter. Romelu Lukaku obviously completed his permanent transfer. This is an interesting theme, because of course these Smalling, Darmian, Alexis, Lukaku, all Manchester United players, all leaving Manchester for Italy. Now, I know Lukaku scored on his Inter debut last weekend, but let's start with Alexis Sanchez, because I have to say that, you know, and you can appreciate this, Aurelio, of these four players that we are discussing, Smalling, Darmian, Alexis, Lukaku, have been seen to be less than successful at Manchester United. And this is a Manchester United team who have been less successful in the Premier League than they have been for a long time as well. So what makes these players better in Serie A than they were in the Premier League? But let's start with Alexis with regards to what your thoughts are and what the thoughts in Italy are of his transfer and the amount of, obviously, the wages have been a huge issue with regards to what United will pay to compensate Inter and what Inter will pay in return.
Yes, that's very interesting, the Alexis Sanchez situation, because Antonio Conte had asked his new employers two strikers. First, Romelu Lukaku. Second, Edin Dzeko from Roma. Everything seemed to be done for Dzeko. The distance was not huge between Inter and Roma. Dzeko had already told Roma that he would go to Inter. Conte was quite happy, but it was not happening because Roma couldn't sign a new striker. It just got to the point where Roma couldn't sign a new striker, and so they had to keep Dzeko, and they made him a new contract. So the deal with Inter collapsed, and suddenly Inter were forced to look for a replacement. So this is the start of the Alexis Sanchez idea. He was not the first choice. The first choice was Edin Dzeko. Then, as you know, Manchester United just couldn't wait to get rid of Alexis Sanchez. Inter Milan suddenly needed another striker. So it was important for Inter Milan that they could get him on loan. And now it's very interesting to see how he performs in Milan under Conte. Because I was listening Francesco Guidolin, who was the former Udinese manager, and he was the manager of Alexis Sanchez when Alexis Sanchez was playing for Udinese. And Guidolin was saying, when Alexis Sanchez got in Udine, he was playing in a different position. He was something like a wing. Then we decided that he would play up front because he's very good on one-on-one and a good finisher. And at Udinese, Sanchez was a success. He made his name in Udine, and then he went to Barcelona and Arsenal and Manchester United. But we all know that the recent performances of Alexis Sanchez were really disappointing. And so it's really a great challenge for Antonio Conte to give new motivations, new energy to Alexis Sanchez. According to Guidolin, Lukaku and Sanchez are the best striking partnership in Serie A.
Because seriously?
Seriously,
that's big. Listen, Francesco's an old friend of ours going back way, Aurelio, as you know, back to our days 15 years ago. Francesco was still doing the Serie A rounds. That's a big statement from Guidolin to say
Yes, that's. I was very surprised too when I heard him say that. But he thinks that Alexis Sanchez is a number 10. So according to Guidolin, Lukaku is the perfect number 9, and Alexis Sanchez playing just behind him can do great things. Maybe he still has some regards for Sanchez, but without a doubt, Sanchez has to prove that he can be back at the highest level, because we all know that at Manchester United he was very disappointing. Another thing is that we all know that some former teammates or former managers let people know that Sanchez is not an easy guy to deal with. So I'm also curious about this. Can he have a good relationship with Conte and with his new teammates? That's another challenge. That's interesting, because we're all very focused on the football performances. But as you know, to get them, you also have to have good human relationships.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head earlier with the human relationships, because that has been very much the center of debate with regards to Alexis Sanchez's failure to make an impact at Manchester United. And it's been said, and we've had information on the podcast, which we've reported throughout, that his attitude was poor in the dressing room. It was poor in training. He didn't like the north of England. We make a joke about it, but it's certainly an issue, and that is that he didn't like the fact he couldn't take his dogs for a walk just out of his back garden. I'm serious. And I hope Atom and Humber, his two dogs, are settling in well. And I'm sure they'll probably be in Lake Como in some lovely house. So I'm sure the foothills of Lake Como will make for nice walking spaces for Atom and Humber. And hopefully that will cheer Alexis up as well. But my point being, seriously, that you have a situation, Aurelio, as you well know. Antonio Conte is not the easiest guy to get on with, especially if you get on the wrong side of him. Alexis Sanchez is known to be moody and brooding, and if he's not in a good frame of mind, it will not produce a good football performance from him. I see this as a very risky strategy from Internazionale to take Alexis on loan, even though if Manchester United are paying the majority of his salary, that's not the point. The point is that Conte has effectively taken a gamble on a player who clearly is problematic.
I think so. And that's why I was saying that I'm very curious about it, because it's going to be a real challenge. And so I'm very curious to see how things happen. For Lukaku, it's different, because he seems to be very comfortable in Milan. I was in San Siro when he scored against Lecce. And of course, he cannot be at the top of his level right now. But he already seemed to be comfortable. And it's a different story also, because Conte absolutely wanted to sign him. For Sanchez, as I said, things turned out differently. And he's in Milan only because the Dzeko deal collapsed.
Well, what we know about Alexis as well is he doesn't like being second choice, Aurelio. So the fact that Edin Dzeko did not sign for Inter and he did does suggest that there's a slightly shaky foundation for that particular move. But let's move on to Romelu Lukaku, a transfer which took forever to happen, but one which Conte won his battle with Agnelli to sign. And he scored, obviously, last weekend. And I think Conte made quite a funny comment, is that correct, regarding the price that Inter made to buy the player?
Yes, but I think that the most interesting thing is that the impact Lukaku made at Inter Milan was positive from the start. Conte made it clear that he wanted from the start that he needs him in shape as soon as possible, and Lukaku already started a diet. He's eating very carefully. Conte, as you know, Conte is very strict on this. He wants players to eat proper things.
So and, is it true, Aurelio, he lost something around 8 or 9 kilos in the summer?
In the summer, I don't think that much, but I think
almost.
And he's eating very carefully. He's training hard, and of course, Conte has a very careful eye on him, because he knows that Lukaku has to perform at his best if Inter want to have real chances to win the Scudetto. Because Conte this season said, made it clear that Juventus and Napoli are well organized, they are ahead of Inter, but he also said, I don't want to put limits on my team, I don't want to put limits on my players. And everybody knows that Antonio Conte doesn't want to be second. He doesn't like to finish second. So nobody believes that he will be happy with a Champions League place. He wants to win the Scudetto. And to win the Scudetto against a Juventus side capable of winning 8 titles in a row would be a great success.
Of course, but not, of course, as many as Celtic have won, which is 9, but that's another story, Aurelio, one that you well know. So, in terms of the way that Serie A is looking, obviously we're very, very early in the season, so we can't, you know, obviously speculate about how things are going to finish up. Sarri has had pneumonia and has missed the first round of games. There are rumours that the Juventus hierarchy have said he needs to stop smoking because that contributed to his illness. We've got Conte, who, as you said, is an aggressive serial winner and wants to make sure that he ends his old club's run of Scudettos. What's your view in terms of, you know, how things stand? Not how things stand, but how things set up and going through the season?
I think that tomorrow evening we will start to have a clear idea. Of course, we're talking about early games. So, but Juventus-Napoli is going to be very, very interesting because we talked about Antonio Conte, we talked about Maurizio Sarri, but there is also Carlo Ancelotti who is chasing the Scudetto with Napoli. So last season he couldn't win anything, and he's not used to not winning things.
To losing, absolutely, yes.
So this season he has to deliver at least one trophy. And he made it clear that the Scudetto is the priority because it is something that Napoli really misses.
How many years, Aurelio, since Napoli won Scudetto?
You know, the Maradona years were the golden years. So now, really, Ancelotti thinks that he's got the right team. And after signing Lozano, now he believes that he's got a real powerful squad, full of options. So last year, for example, the first part of the season was very interesting because, as you can remember, Napoli were capable of beating Liverpool at home, for example, and they were not so far from qualifying in a difficult group where Liverpool and Paris Saint-Germain joined. So now, as I said, the priority is the Scudetto and the Italian title, and they have quality players like Cajon, Mertens, Insigne, Fabian Ruiz, and as I said, Lozano. So Saturday night, Juventus against Napoli, it's going to be the first tough challenge for the two main contenders for the Italian title. And Juventus remained favorites, but they seem to have a problem with the squads because there are so many players who haven't been sold, and players like Mario Mandzukic, for example, not happy to be in Turin and not happy to be the first choice of Sarri. Everybody believes that Juventus are going to play Douglas Costa, Higuain and Ronaldo against Napoli. And if you have a look at the bench, you can find people like Buffon, Cuadrado, maybe De Ligt again, and Rabiot, Emerson, Dybala, Mandzukic, so much quality.
I would say, really, that's one of the best squads I think Juventus have had in a long time, if you look at the bench and then what's on the pitch.
Yes, but this is not something which helps the manager, in my opinion, because when you have to deal with high-quality players and you have to tell them that they're going to the bench or in the stands, it's not going to be easy. It happens in the top clubs, but you have to be a limited number of high-quality players doing that. If you have too many, then it's going to be a big challenge to deal with them.
I think what you're trying to say is, in the words of the great Harry Redknapp, it's a good headache to have.
I think that for Maurizio Sarri, this is going to be a tough challenge. Also because if he wins the Scudetto, okay, for him personally...
It's expected, really. It's expected for him to win Scudetto. Yes. No one debates that.
Yes. So for Juventus, it's a habit to win the Scudetto. Yeah. For Sarri, it's not, but that's another story. But to be successful with this Juventus side, it means that you have to win the Scudetto, the Italian Cup, and more importantly, the Champions League.
Champions League, absolutely.
Which is the real obsession for Juventus.
So, before we go back to Juventus, I want to talk to you about Aaron Ramsey. Former Spurs striker Fernando Llorente is set to join Napoli on a free transfer. Is, again, this something which has been a surprise? Because this is a guy at 34, didn't make an impact at Tottenham Hotspur, but is a Spain international. Obviously, he's known by Carlo Ancelotti. But do they need the extra cover, do you think?
It's been a surprise because Antonio Conte was also interested in signing him. And they worked together at Juve. And but Ancelotti thought that Llorente would be very useful for his squad because sometimes he uses small players up front like Cajon, Mertens and Insigne, but sometimes he likes to have a big guy up front like Milik or Llorente in this case. So he thinks that an experienced guy like Fernando Llorente will be very useful throughout the season. Also because, as I said before, Napoli's first aim is the Italian title, but they also want to make the most of their Champions League experience.
Now, before going to any more news elsewhere in the European transfer window, Aurelio, I just want to get your thoughts on Aaron Ramsey, who, when he signed for Juventus on a pre-contract in February of this year, was a big, big noise and a big story. But that story seems and that noise has quieted down. And obviously he's suffered an injury, et cetera, et cetera. What's the situation with Ramsey now?
The situation is the one you said. And I think that it has to do with the managers. Because Massimiliano Allegri really liked Ramsey a lot. And I know that he wanted to have Ramsey before than expected. He would have loved to have him for the second part of last season. So when Juventus played against Atletico or Ajax, he would have liked to have a player like Ramsey because Allegri thought that was the kind of player Juventus were missing at that time. Then Juventus worked on the deal and everybody expected Ramsey to come when he came. And in the meantime, Sarri took over. And I think that we really have to understand what Maurizio Sarri actually thinks about Ramsey. Because with Allegri, I think that Ramsey would have been irregular. With Sarri, I think it's going to be difficult and he has to prove Sarri that he's the right man for him.
Very interesting, Aurelio, that's the case. I mean, I don't disagree that Allegri was the man who behind Ramsey's signing. And I do believe that Ramsey and Rabiot were sensational in the terms of they both came under freedom of contract to Juventus this summer. But I think Ramsey was obviously, the phrase, you know, sold the story that he would be first choice, et cetera, et cetera. and was given a great financial contract, but expected to play every single week in the way that Arsenal were not willing to value him in the way that he or his representatives had expected. So it will be very interesting to see how Ramsey's season pans out, because obviously I think, one of the best midfielders in the Premier League of the last 7-8 years. But again, I wasn't surprised, but I'd say I was mildly kind of curious about his decision to join Juventus, because I looked at their midfield already before Rabiot even signed and thought to myself, well, where does he fit in? But he's a very good, very, very good and a very high quality player. So you have to back him to back himself to get into that team.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Ramsey is a fantastic player, but I thought that Juventus would get rid of more players, would try to make space for him, while, for example, a player like Khedira is still there. Matuidi, there were whispers that Juventus were going to sell him, but at the moment he's still there. Then Rabiot was signed. Juventus kept Emre Can. Bentancur is still there. So I think the competition is huge. Of course, we cannot base our analysis or predictions on the lineup of the first two games because of what happened to Sarri, because Sarri now is trying to make the last year's team play, because he wants to bring his new ideas gradually. And so, for example, Pjanic, Khedira and Matuidi played the first game, but it's not going to be maybe like that during the season. And that's why I was saying that it will take time to fully understand what Maurizio Sarri thinks about Ramsey. But for sure, it won't be easy for him to get a place as a regular. And if Allegri had stayed, it would have been easier.
So before we go on to our quickfire round, Aurelio, a couple of, well, one player in particular I'd like to ask you about in terms of Serie A and the transfer debt, and it would be Paulo Dybala, who obviously has been linked heavily with Manchester United and Tottenham, who cannot now sign him because the transfer window is closed in England. But PSG have expressed an interest in him with regards to the potential transfer of Neymar to Barcelona. Is there any movement on Dybala and the possibility of him leaving Juventus?
There is still a possibility. And as you said, now Paris Saint-Germain looks to be the only potential buyer. But Dybala, from the start of the market, made it clear that he wants to stay at Juventus because he thinks that he can be an important guy, a key player for Juve. And I think that the possibility exists for a last-time move, but in the end, the real player's will is to stay. So I think that the chances that he stays are bigger than the chances that he goes.
However, would we be in the same position, do you expect, in January, where Dybala's on the market?
Possible, but I think that he can make an impact, because I think that Sarri has plans for Dybala. I mean, Douglas Costa is a player that, if he's fit, Sarri always wants to see, and of course, no question, the other side is for Ronaldo. So the only position is central attacking player. So up front, it will be Higuain or Dybala. It depends on the games. But Dybala thinks that he can become a regular. He's very confident. He was not happy under Allegri. He thought that he deserved more. But I think that he thinks he can be a key man under Sarri. So he wants to fight for a place. And the Juventus fans are crazy for Dybala. They really, yeah, they really back him. They really support him. So that's another factor.
So from Italy, Aurelio, where obviously you are based, I am currently in Spain, and I am on top of the ever, ever growing saga of Neymar's potential move back to Barcelona. We understand that Josep Maria Bartomeu, the Barcelona president, met with the president of Paris Saint-Germain, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, in Monaco yesterday and again this morning, that is Friday, with regards to negotiating the transfer of Neymar back to the Camp Nou. The two clubs have agreed the valuation of the player, which is around 200 million euros. Of course, that's 22 million euros less than PSG paid for the player 2 years ago. However, financial fair play and salary cap limitations in La Liga are so far preventing that deal to go through as a straight cash transaction. And so far, Barca have offered what can only be described, Aurelio, as a menu of players that they would like to swap or indeed loan for a season. Dembele is one who we know about, but is very reticent about leaving. Rakitic the same. So apparently today, Todibo, Semedo, Artur and Umtiti have all been made available. Or sorry, I should say, they have been mentioned in a potential deal for Neymar to go back to Barcelona from PSG. Now, I know you're a student of these things, Aurelio. It'd be great to get your insight on what you think may or may not happen with regards to La Operación de Neymar.
It's interesting because the news about Neymar in Barcelona, they change every 5 minutes. So it's a real guess.
We've seen that before.
It is clear that, as you said, Barcelona would love to use players also to get the deal done. And for a player under contract with Barcelona, it's not very easy to leave Barcelona, even if another top club wants you, or you might go to another top club. So involving other players is not the easiest thing for Barcelona. That's something that is really going to be very interesting till the end, because Neymar is a player who did very well in Barcelona, but at Paris Saint-Germain, we all know the story, things didn't happen, and so it would not be a great thing for Paris Saint-Germain to keep him, or at least to keep the same player of last season, because nobody can have doubts about Neymar's talent, but his attitude is very important. The feeling is that in Barcelona, with Messi and with some players who are also his friends, he can still make things happen. But we cannot forget that with the signing of Griezmann, there might be less space for him. So it's going to be really, really interesting to find out if the deal actually happens, because a couple of hours ago, or I would say yesterday, the deal seemed to be done. Now things seem to be more difficult. Tomorrow things can change again.
I think you're absolutely correct on that one, Aurelio. And you know what? I would have said to anyone who asked me a week ago that Neymar would have ended up at Camp Nou before the transfer with the deadline closed. But given the way that things are going, I sense, speaking to contacts at Football Club Barcelona, that they are less than convinced that the financial commitment they have to make, the emotional commitment because of Neymar's recent behavioural problems, etc., that he will add to the squad, and maybe it would be negative rather than positive to sign him. And the longer this goes on, the less likely this is to happen. Now, I'm not saying it's not going to, but I would say that I think it's less likely than I would have said a week ago. Now, to end our podcast today, we obviously have the legendary quickfire round. And I'm going to ask our guest, the number one football man in Italy, Aurelio Capaldi, to rate the Premier League's migration squad who have gone from the Premier League to Italy in Serie A, and who will have the best season or the biggest impact. It's up to you, Aurelio, how you want to phrase that. But I will give you a scale of 0 to 10, and I will give you each of those six players. I'm going to give you Smalling, Darmian, Alexis Lucas. Yeah, six players. I'm going to give you those six players. And please give us a mark out of 10 for who you think will have the biggest impact dash best season. So let's start with the one who signed first, and that was Aaron Ramsey to Juventus. How do you rate that?
Seven.
Nice. Okay. It's a good positive start, Aurelio. And now, after, let's go with Romelu Lukaku and the Internazionale.
Seven again.
You're sounding a bit like a strip to come dancing judge here. That's a reference you won't recognise, Aurelio, but that's fine. Because you go seven. Alexis Sanchez.
Six.
Ooh, he's gone six. Okay. That's quite high, actually. I think Manchester City fans would tell you that'd be very generous. Chris Smalling.
Six.
Okay. You know, Aurelio, that we will come back to you at the end of the season and ask you to do this again and then against each club's performance and their players' performance. You know that, don't you? you don't get away with anything on the Transfer Window podcast. Matteo Darmian and Parma.
Matteo Darmian, Parma, six.
Six. Okay, so 2 7s and 2 6s. Romelu Lukaku, you gave 7-2. So Fernando Llorente is our last one.
Six.
Ah, you've been very generous. Very generous. It's in your nature to be very generous, Aurelio, so I'm not surprised. but as I said, Duncan Castles is not so generous, and he will definitely come back for his butterfly net and ask you exactly why you gave these marks to these players then. Now, if that's the end of this particular Transfer Window podcast, and of course, as I was about to say, if you want to get in touch, please do. It's at Transfer Podcast on our Twitter handle, or individually at GarboSJ, at Aurelio Capaldi, where you know that we love to interact and engage with you on all the things we've spoken about during the podcast. If you want to give something back, we say this all the time, but it is important. Get onto iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, expands and helps us to create a bigger community, for which, of course, you know, this is the UK's number one football podcast. And we have listeners all around the world, not just in the UK. You check our timeline, you will see the tweets and also questions and interaction we get from people all around the world. So thank you very much for that. We appreciate it very much. We will be back on Monday. I will see you through the transfer window, because you know what? It's when it ends for Europe. 2300 British summer time. And we will look forward to welcoming our numero uno Aurelio back in the transfer window very, very soon. Thank you, Aurelio, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
very much appreciated, fratello. And we shall see you on Monday. Until then, thanks for listening.